Hello, everyone. We are going to now have a talk from Andrew Satch, who is a member of the ministry team here at St. Helens, and he is going to talk to you about the Christian faith. You will notice on your table slips of paper that look like this. Please feel free to jot down any questions, if you have any, while Andrew is talking. So I will welcome Andrew Satch.
It's great to be here, and great to have a chance to speak about the Christian faith in the middle of a wine tasting. Maybe it's a slightly unusual event. Someone said to me earlier today, however are you going to make the link between Chardonnay to Jesus? But actually, the Bible's got quite a lot to say about wine. It comes up lots of times in the Bible. Of course, Jesus famously was attending a wedding once and turned water into wine. I think that always surprises people. You know, here's a party and it's not going very well. They've run out of wine. And someone says, fetch Jesus. Which I say is a surprise because, I don't know about you, but Christians don't always have a reputation for being the people who get the party going. When were you last at a party that someone said, this is going a bit flat. Someone see if you can find any Christians to come and join us. But that's what happens in this party. It's going flat. There's no wine. Someone says, go and get Jesus. And he turns all this water into wine miraculously. And that surprises people because mostly we've got a God who, well, if he had the chance, would always be turning wine into water. You're going around seeing if anyone's having fun and dampening it down and immediately trying to make everyone kind of serious and religious. And we certainly wouldn't be doing anything like this in a church. But I want to say, I think this is in the spirit of Jesus. He loved wine. He made wine. And he spoke quite a lot about wine. And what I want to do is to draw your attention to a little incident in Jesus' life and teaching where he mentions winemaking methodology. And we'll kind of spin out from that to see a little bit about the Christian faith. But to do that, I wonder if you can find on your tables one of these Mark's Gospels. This is a part of the Bible, and it's part of one of the eyewitness biographies of Jesus, describing his life and his teaching 2,000 years ago. And he has a little bit to say about winemaking. And it's on page 7. And it's about two-thirds of the way through where it says little verse number 22. Page 7, tiny little number 22, about three-quarters of the way down the page. And Jesus says this, no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins and the wine is destroyed and so are the skins. But new wine is for fresh wineskins. Well, it's a weird little saying, and Jesus isn't actually trying to teach people about how to make wine. He's actually using it as a little analogy, a little illustration. I guess in these days, maybe Tim can tell us, I think nowadays you ferment wine in kind of stainless steel tanks mostly. At least whenever I've been to a vineyard, they've had that kind of thing going on. But in those days, you fermented wine in some leather skins kind of sewed together, and the wine fermented in the skins. But you had to remember to use new wine skins for new wine so that it still had some give in the leather. Otherwise, when it started to ferment and the bubbles came up, it would just burst the skins and you'd have a massive mess and everything would be destroyed and ruined. And Jesus takes that little picture and says, well, new wine has got to be put in new wine skins. Now, what on earth has that got to do with Christianity or about Jesus? Well, what he's saying is, when it comes to understanding Jesus and understanding Christianity, he's not going to fit the way in which your life makes sense at the moment. He won't fit your kind of normal way of going about your day, your normal way of what you live for. He won't even fit your kind of preconceptions about religion, your thoughts about church. He says, if you're going to understand me at all, you're going to have to get whole new categories to put me into, a whole new kind of life to make sense of me, a whole new definition of church, a whole new outlook on everything. And Jesus tells this little story to say, if you don't do that, if you try and fit me into your existing view of the world, well, it's going to be a disaster. It'd just be like if you put the wine in the old wineskins and it starts to ferment and they burst and there's wine everywhere and everything is destroyed. He's saying, you've got to treat me, well, I'm something new. I'm not what you expected. In fact, you're going to have to change everything around if you're going to understand me at all. I want to just share with you, just in the few minutes we have, just a few things about Jesus that I think are unexpected. few things about Jesus that didn't fit my preconceptions about Christianity when I started looking into it at university. A few ways in which he is the new wine, and if we're going to understand him properly, we need a new wineskin approach. First surprise about Jesus, for me anyway, was that he was historical. That was a surprise. You know, I'd grown up sometimes going to church, and when I was a kid, you know, and we went because that was what you did in our village. And I thought it was all about kind of meaningless rituals and stained glass windows and church buildings, and certainly not about wine tastings. And it was a real surprise to me to meet some Christians, get chatting to them, and understand that Christianity is about history. This book's all about history. It's about stuff that happened, about Jesus, who was walking around Palestine, the Middle East, 2,000 years ago, doing stuff that people saw and wrote down. Now, it might be that's really obvious. You already realise that. But I'll tell you why it's a surprise to me. I thought that the question about Jesus was always a question of whether you wanted to be religious or not. And frankly, I didn't. I wasn't particularly into organ music. Didn't particularly like stained glass windows. I wasn't. But I realised that actually if it happened, the question isn't about do I like being religious, but what happened in history? Who was this guy, Jesus Christ? Is he the kind of person I need to take seriously or not? First surprise about Jesus is his historical. Second surprise about Jesus is there's evidence. So he's someone in history, not just a guy that everyone thinks, well, he's a great inspiring teacher. Jesus in history does stuff, well, actually only God could do. People witness it, they see it. Eyewitnesses see stuff that only God could do. I'll just give you an example. Turn back a page to page 5. And at the bottom of the page 5, where it says, Jesus cleanses a leper. A leper came to him, imploring him, and kneeling said to him, if you will, you can make me clean. Moved with pity, he stretched out his hand and touched him and said to him, I will be clean. And immediately the leprosy left him and he was made clean. And Jesus sternly charged him and sent him away at once and said to him, say nothing to anyone, but go show yourself to the priest and offer to your cleansing what Moses commanded for a proof to them. But he went out and began to freely talk about it and spread the news so that Jesus could no longer openly enter a town. So it's not just Jesus has a kind of message of, hey, here's how to be a bit more enlightened or here's how to have a fuller life. There's evidence. He does stuff that no one but God can do. Here's a leper comes to him. Jesus touches this leper, and he's made well. Now, I picked this episode particularly because, now I've got to tell you a little bit about myself. As well as enjoying a little bit of wine, I'm also a bit of a hypochondriac. And I've got a few friends who are medics. In fact, I met some of them on my table. Another guy, Will, is a medic as well. And Tom on my table, actually for my birthday last week, I kid you not, gave me a copy of the Oxford Handbook of Clinical Specialties. Okay, this is a bad gift for a hypochondriac. Okay, so this is a book the doctors use to work out what's wrong with you in hospital, and they kind of look it up. And this is a book specially about, well, it's about gynecology. That's not much use to me. It's also about ophthalmology, stuff wrong with your eyes. And there's a massive section on dermatology, what's wrong with your skin. And it's got pictures, and they're pretty rough. And here's a picture of leprosy. You can come look at it afterwards. It looks pretty rough. And medics can't cure leprosy by touching you 2,000 years later. It's not the kind of thing you can fake doing. If someone's got a leprosy diagnosis and you say, here's a religious idea, that doesn't help them. If you can say to them, be clean and touch them and then they're okay, and then they go and show as proof to the priest to verify what's happened, that's evidence. Now, it's not just that's an isolated example. I like it because it was in my clinical book. But as you look through this eyewitness book about Jesus, full of evidence, full of miraculous things that only God could do. Now, of course, it might be that you're here and say, well, look, I don't believe miracles are possible at all. I think they're scientifically impossible. Jesus can't have done that. If you say that, that's what I used to say as a kind of arrogant atheist science student. I just want to ask you how you know they're not possible. Because I reckon that what's probably going on in your head is, look, I'm an atheist and I've decided there's no God and therefore I've decided that the things that the law of nature describe are always true. I want to ask you, how do you know that's the case? How do you know there's no God? How do you know that there's not a God who made the world, who, if he wanted to show us beyond doubt that we had to take him seriously, could make a once in a lifetime, once in the history of the world, alteration of the laws of biology. Touch a leper and be clean. That surprised me. Christianity is about history. That surprised me. Christianity is about evidence. Stuff that only God could do, that Jesus did. Actually, when I started looking into Christianity as a student in Cambridge, I started to look at some of this evidence, and I basically became quite convicted by it. It's not wishful thinking. It's not about being religious. Here are intelligent people looking at real history and deciding that the God who made the universe has made himself known. But my reaction to that wasn't, oh, this is fantastic. It was actually to be quite unsettled by it. I was living my life the way I wanted to, and this was quite uncomfortable. And it was uncomfortable because I thought that the Jesus who could cleanse lepers was in the business of wrecking people's lives, making people boring, turning wine into water, stamping out any fun, giving you enormous lists of rules of things you had to do to make sure you didn't enjoy yourself. And then one day, maybe reluctantly, stingily letting you into heaven if you'd done well enough. That was my view. So here's my third and final surprise about Jesus. Jesus came to fix stuff. He's historical. There's evidence, real evidence. He does stuff only God could do. And he came to fix stuff, to fix people, to fix the world. I got it in my head that Jesus came to stuff up stuff, you know, that somehow Christianity would wreck my life. But I started looking at Jesus and actually found that whenever somebody encountered him, he fixed them. He sorted things out. He made the world okay. And as you look at his miracles, you'll find that they're not just kind of party tricks, like, oh, you know, I'll do something just for fun. His miracles are normally about evidence that he can fix stuff. Here's a leper, an outcast of society. No one would even touch this guy. Probably hadn't had a hug from anyone, including his parents, since his diagnosis. Here's Jesus. He touches him. Be clean. Has compassion on him. His life is transformed. He's fixed. Next up in the gospel, in the next episode, there's a man who is a sinner. That means a man who's stuffed up with God. Not a great Christian, but someone who knows that before God's perfect standards, they're a moral failure. Might be someone here who's honest enough to admit that you haven't always made a good job of stuff. And Jesus forgives him. He fixes stuff. He gives him a new start. The whole gospel actually is a beautiful story of a Jesus who's got the power to do the miraculous and the desire to put people back together again. Not least to put back together our relationship with a God who loves us and made us, but who we've stuffed it up with. That was a surprise to me, see, because I thought that Christianity was about make-believe stories and stained glass windows, but it was about history. I thought Christianity was about kind of wishful thinking, pre-scientific myths, but it turned out there was evidence. I thought that Christianity was about stuffing up your life with rules and boring religion, but it was about a God who loves us, who wants to put things back together. In particular, to put back together our broken relationship with him, to bring forgiveness and a new start. See, that was a surprise to me. And I want to say to you that the Christianity that Jesus offers is fantastic. Absolutely fantastic. I mean, who wouldn't be excited by a message about a God who was real and true and had the power and the ability to put everything back together again? Who wouldn't want that? But you know, the really weird thing as you read this book, and I hope you'll take these away and read them afterwards, they're yours to take away. The really strange thing as you read this is not everyone is thrilled with Jesus. Not everyone is pleased about what they encounter. It's not that they're not convinced that he's historical. Here are people who are walking around Palestine with him, viewing his ministry, spending time with him. It's not that they're not convinced that he has the power to do the miraculous. They watch him do the miraculous time and time again. It's not even that they don't realize that his motives are good. They see him transform people. But they just don't want it. They don't like it because it doesn't fit with the way their life is right now. Doesn't fit with their categories. Doesn't fit with their lifestyle. Doesn't fit with their expectations. Doesn't fit with the way that you go about stuff. Probably that's true of people here, isn't it? Here you are minding your business, going about your work. Someone invites you to a wine tasting. And suddenly this religious guy is telling you that you're supposed to change your life because of a man 2,000 years ago. And you just don't want to. Because it's new. And it's different. And you prefer to stick with what's old. Well, that's where Jesus' little story about wine comes in. He says, be careful. Something amazing has come into this world. The God who made this world has made himself known. And he wants to fix stuff for you. But just beware, because no one puts new wine into old wineskins. If he does, the wine will burst the skins. And both the wine and the skins will be destroyed. Now, that's a mistake I've very nearly made with Christianity. It's a mistake I've seen lots of people make, to reject it, not because of evidence. People reject it without looking at the evidence. To reject it, not because it's bad, because everything I've ever seen about Jesus is wonderful. But just to reject it because it doesn't fit. And Jesus says, don't do that. Now, here is something new, and it needs a pretty serious looking at. And it needs to be looked at. It's going to need new wineskins. New way of thinking about a whole lot of stuff. Who are you in this world? Why are you here? Is there a God who made you and loves you? What's the future for? Who's Jesus about? And the kind of questions, as you follow them through, threaten to change your life. But Jesus commends that to you. New wine is for new wineskins. A great thing, a fantastic thing. But beware to dismiss him for the wrong reasons. If you do, he says, both the wine and the skins will be destroyed. Just a thought. Jesus isn't quite who you expected. And something quite serious to think about in the middle of a chilled and nice evening.
We're going to start having a question and go through some of the questions shortly. However, there were lots of questions, so thank you very much, and we may not get through all of them. So if you feel that we do not adequately address your questions, again, I'd like to remind you that there are Christianity Explored classes in which you will have the chance to ask your questions and get maybe more substantial answers. Again, there are flyers in the back table over there if you would like to come check out another event tomorrow night. And as always, there is the 6 p.m. service if you are interested. So to keep these, since some of them were similar, we grouped them. You said the Bible is historically reliable and about evidence. Can you give some examples? Why do you keep talking about evidence historically when you're in Mark's gospel? How do we know that it wasn't fabricated or made up?
Yeah, fantastic. Thank you. Am I on? Yes. This is a really important question, and it's well worth looking at seriously, and I don't want to just brush it under the carpet. It is the subject of tomorrow evening's talk, and that isn't just a dodging out of it, but it will take a whole evening to look at the question of can we trust it historically. It's also the subject of some books that are available on the bookstall over there. So if this is your sticking point, please check it out. Something when I was looking into Christianity, I was a scientist by background, and I was pretty concerned about knowing whether the evidence was reliable. So that was a concern for me, and I could talk about that for, 45 minutes, an hour, and would love to. Just some highlights. This isn't the book that you would make up. So if you wanted to make up a religion, it wouldn't be this. In various ways. One of the biggest reasons for that is that this book ends with Jesus dying on a cross, being crucified by the Romans, which, according to kind of Jewish law, to have someone dying on a tree meant that God had rejected them and cursed them. And so one of the massive stumbling blocks for Jewish people becoming Christians, and remember all the early Christians were Jews, one of the massive stumbling blocks was having a Messiah who died on the cross. Just an absolute nonsense for Jews. So lots more people would have been attracted to Jesus' message if he hadn't died like that. It's not the message you make up. Secondly, it's not the message you can get away with making up. So if I wanted to make up a miraculous story, and it wasn't really true, I would set it long, long ago, far, far away. So I'd say, you know, I was in the Peak District 20 years ago on my own with Christine, and she did these amazing miracles. You know, you've got to take my word for it because, I mean, no one else was there, but let me tell you about what she did. I could make up that kind of stuff. The kind of stuff I couldn't make up was stuff that I set 5 years ago and that happened in the middle of central London with thousands of people present. Because just too many people saw it. And if it's wrong, it's going to be contradicted immediately. Especially if this is not a popular message with the authorities at the time. Now remember, early Christianity was very, very unpopular. Because the official religion in the whole of the Roman Empire was to worship the emperor. And there was special exemption for the Jewish religion. So Jews didn't have to worship Caesar, but everyone else did. There was no exemption for Christianity as this kind of new cult on the block. And so Christians were brutally persecuted and murdered quite soon into the first century. And the officials wanted to stamp it out. So the kind of gaping holes where you're saying something about public events that were recent, which isn't what happened, you can't get away with that when people want to close you down. In particular, I think one of the things that's fascinating for me about reading this book is just the number of places it names. It doesn't just say vaguely, Jesus did this amazing stuff. It says, Jesus did this in this city, and this was the person it happened to. For example, Jesus performs a miracle where he raises a girl from the dead. We're told her father's name, Jairus, his occupation, he's the ruler of the synagogue, and the town it happened in. Now, to look up the synagogue ruler in the town of Capernaum, that's like looking up the kind of head of the post office in Blackpool or something. You know, you can find them. And this was circulated in the first century. It's the kind of thing that's inviting people to check. I don't think you can make it up like that. There's more to say, loads more to say. If that is your sticking point, can I just say to you, please don't dismiss Christianity before you have considered that question adequately. So there is lots of evidence there, more than I've got time for now. But to dismiss the whole thing before you've checked out that kind of historical stuff, I think is a head in the sand kind of move. So come back tomorrow night, go to the books table, get one of the books on it, come to Christian Export, but sort that one out if that's your question.
Thank you, Andrew. We have a question about works. Can't I just go through my life being a good person? What will happen if I just do good things and don't believe in God?
Okay, yeah. I suppose the question is, what is the basis of the reality of the world that we live in? So if we live in a world where there's no God, and we're just here by, you know, random accident or whatever it is, then the only thing that really matters, I suppose, is, well, the survival of our species, maybe, if that matters, or something like that, the prolonging of our DNA. And so as long as you behave in a way that preserves your DNA and that of your species, then that's the kind of ethical test of what's good. If you manage to do that without being a Christian, that's fine. You know, if all we are is a random organism, then behave like a random organism, that's okay. But if the Bible's right, and who we are as human beings is people designed and made by a God who loves us and wants to know us, then to live our lives in a world where the very thing that we're designed for is to know and love God, and we don't do that, is the kind of fundamental ethical error. So some people say, look, can't I be a good person without being Christian? And the answer is, well, it depends if God is God. If God is God and he made you and he gives you everything and you ignore him, that's awful. You know, it's like, you know, growing up in your parents' house and they give you everything and then saying, I don't want anything to do with my parents. I mean, it's just an awful way to treat somebody who's given you so much. But if that God doesn't exist and he didn't give you anything and it's just it doesn't matter whether you acknowledge him or not, it's just a fairy tale. It actually matters whether it's true. If there is a God who made us, if Jesus Christ came to fix our relationship with him, then it really matters that how we relate to God. And just very quickly on that, I think there might be a question about kind of other religions and stuff. The big issue with once we realize there is a God is what do we do about the fact that we stuff things up with him? Because if you're honest here, now you might say to me, this isn't true of you, It's true of me, and it's true of everyone I know who's honest. If you're honest here, you know that you do not live your life the way that even you would love to have lived it. There's regrets and things you're ashamed of and stuff you wouldn't like to make public. And you know, if there is a God who knows everything about you, there's a whole lot of stuff that's messy with him straight away. And the wonderful thing about Jesus' ministry, his message, his teaching, was that he came to fix stuff with God. And that is something that we cannot do for ourselves. Just like a man with leprosy can't fix his leprosy, so people with a broken relationship with God can't fix that. And it might be you've tried to. It might be that God seems to you a million miles away because you've tried to reach him and you can't. And Jesus says, yeah, you can't reach him because stuff's got stuffed up with him. I can fix it.
So I guess we have time for about one more question. This one is, why do I need to believe in Jesus? What if I think I don't need Jesus and I'm okay by myself?
Yeah, what if you think you're okay by yourself? Again, I think it just depends on whether Jesus is right. So Jesus steps into history and says, let me tell you about the God who made you, who loves you. Let me tell you about how you stuff things up with him and how you are far from him in the way that you live. Let me tell you how serious that is. This cuts you off from life, the life of God. And one day, you know, we'll face him on judgment day and give account for our lives, and we're in great trouble. Let me tell you how I can fix it. Now, it seems to me that if Jesus is right about those things, then there is nothing more important than what he says. If there is a God who made each person here, who loves us, who we've rejected and live as if he didn't exist, which I've done for many years of my life, and if one day I face him on judgment day and I have nothing to say about how I've stuffed up, and he is offering me forgiveness and stuff put back together, fixed, then that is the most important thing in the world for everyone here. Irrespective of whether you're religious or, you know, whatever it might be, this is really important. On the other hand, if it's not true, if it's a fairy tale, then it's actually relevant for everyone here. And some people here, the Christians here, are wasting their life, and you know, you should be slightly pitying of us. But I think those are the two options, really. I can't imagine. C.S. Lewis, the guy who wrote the Chronicles of Narnia, you know, The Lion, the Witch, and the Wardrobe, that stuff. He once said, Christianity, if true, is of ultimate importance. If false, is of no importance. The one thing it cannot be is of moderate importance. And what I'd love for you to do as a result of tonight is to consider, look into it, check it out. Do I need to take this seriously? If it's true, you really do, and it's fantastic news.